What is going on, guys? Matt Downs with Daily Grind Fantasy Sports here with Kevin to break down MMA. It is a 15-game slate. It starts on Saturday. And guys, we are finally out of the quarantine sports phase, so we are no longer, well, we're still breaking down esports. It's just that the contest sizes are very, very small, and we're now moving into MLB, NBA, MMA, NASCAR, and golf, and all of that is covered on our Patreon. On Patreon, you guys get our favorite leverage spots, plus our ownership projections for every single sport. Going forward, we'll be doing live streams for MLB, NBA before lock, and also NFL once that does come up. It looks like in about a month, guys. Start counting down the days because NFL season is going to be a blast. Me, Kevin, and TJ are all going to be doing it live before lock. So, again, guys, cannot wait for that. And also, guys, if you have any questions about this slate in general, it is 15 fights, so I do suspect a lot of questions will be flying in. Feel free to reach out in Twitter on our YouTube videos in the comment section below. Feel free to reach out in our Discord as well if you guys are Patreon members. Feel free, of course, we'll be looking through all of our comments, answering questions throughout the entire weekend. We have our hands full with DFS, so hopefully this is a very profitable weekend. I have a very good feeling because 15 fights, and I know that Kevin's already been doing a lot of research. First of all, Kevin, how are you doing, and how do you feel about this card?
I'm doing awesome. I'm excited about this card. I mean, this is probably the biggest card we've broken down. I mean, 15 fights is unreal. I might be the biggest card I've ever seen. I don't know if I've seen that before, but I'm excited. So let's go right into the recap from last week so we can get right into this card. Last week we had UFC Fight Night, Figueiredo versus Benavidez. Had another great night last Saturday, and it went just about as expected for the most part. Running through the fights, I talked about, well, actually before that, I just want to talk about how last week and the week prior, we were talking about how it was like GPP weeks, or last week, and I think the fight prior, rather, that Wednesday night, and both came to fruition. I mean, there's just times you want to attack cash games, and there's times you want to attack the tourneys, and I talked about how much I hated cash last week and thought GPP made sense, and I ended up doing one contest of... Yeah, man. I mean, I'm telling you, I did one contest of each. I got smoked in cash, but in my tourney, I did one tourney and came in second out of 300 people. So it went real well. Going through the fights from that weekend, I liked Spivak. He performed well, even without a finish. I was all over Albazi. I know just about everybody asked for some reason about him in the Patreon. It's just everyone was interested in him, and I was all for him and had him in mind. And he was a big leverage play. Not a lot of guys had him, and he crushed it, got the finish over Gordon. And not to toot my own horn, but find someone else who had their only two punts as winners that took down a minus 200 and a minus 365. I mean, that was freaking sick. Of course, I'm referring to Brett Johns and Joel Alvarez. I mean, one was 6,900. I think the other was 7,000 or 7,100. And they got the back-to-back upsets. And those were my two punts. So
was it Johns? Hold on real quick. Was it Johns that got the absolute slaughter? I think one of the
favorites. That was Alvarez.
Favorites. Okay, because one of the favorites got like 1 point. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, Joe Duffy got absolutely. Well, I'm trying to think. Duffy. Yeah, Joel Alvarez got the finish. I know that, so. Yeah, I talked about how Joe Duffy really wasn't living up the price tag for me. And Joe Alvarez, like I said, he had 16 finishes out of 16 wins. So I want to attack that. And he looked awesome doing it. So, and that's why I put my money towards Grant Dawson for my bigger money. And he looked good, got the job done. Wasn't in the most spectacular fashion, but definitely hit his price point. Was all over Roman DeLeeds, too, as one of our top GPP guys. Had him in my contest, and he got the finish and looked great doing so. So we murdered the undercard. Like, we absolutely crushed it left and right. Like, we set ourselves up for success for the entire night off the undercard. Main card was a little rougher, but it was, you know, it can be like that, especially when you have close fights, and there was a couple ones. I will say, like, Pantoja and Diakisi, I was pretty high on. They just kind of were letdowns. I mean, they are good fighters. They just didn't get to their offense. I mean, both of them just looked slow. It was kind of weird. They both just looked a little slow. But other than that, I mean, I had Lipsky for leverage because everyone took Carolina. She carried pretty big ownership, so I had Lipsky, and she looked awesome. Did the same thing with Hermanson. I took him in GPP and Kelvin in cash, and Hermanson got the finish, and in a very kind of impressive but weird way with that heel hook. So It was nice to see that. So yeah, and then for me, I was 5 for 5 heading in the main event and just needed Figueiredo to close the deal. And boy, did he do that. I mean, he looked awesome. Made Benavidez look terrible, to be honest. He just absolutely smoked him. So yeah, we crushed GPP, and what I saw on the Patreon Discord, everyone else did too. So, or at least for the most part, it was a big, big GPP night.
Yeah, and I want to touch base on a couple things too. First of all, I also did not cash in cash because we stacked the main card as you should have, because Benavidez did cover, I think he covered 40 to 50% ownership in cash, and he got 1 point. So that obviously is not going to get it done at that ownership, but if it did, it was huge leverage. And even in cash contests. And that's why ownership, guys, is the most important thing in all of DFS. Kevin was able to find the soft spots, those leverage points that were able to push him into the. I mean, Kevin literally has not been playing DFS for that long, and for him to identify the leverage spots like that and beat over 300 people, it's so easy once you sit down and look at the leverage sheet and observe the ownership. Ownership is by far the most important thing. You cannot just pick fighters. You can't just go into it blindly and just be like, "Oh, I think this guy's gonna win." I think you can't do that, because sometimes the ownership and the styles of these fighters, which we've talked about in all these videos, don't make sense. And we're able to identify the soft spots. And cash did not cash, and then GPPs, obviously on the flip side, came in first, almost first place for Kevin. So just want to talk about that before we dive right into this slate, because we do not, as of right now, it is 1:17 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We do not have ownership projections on these, which is why I always preach Patreon, Patreon, Patreon. You'll find the leverage spots. You guys will find success there if you're able to, of course, identify those leverage spots and the ownership and those soft spots, which we do every single slate. If you guys are interested, again, $20 a month to jump on that. We'll have the ownerships updated at the very we'll have the ownerships updated tomorrow morning, and of course we'll be pushing that out to Patreon. Right now we're gonna go ahead and predict the ownership as much as we can. I can kind of gauge, after listening to Kevin's breakdown of all these fighters, I can kind of identify what the ownership's gonna look like. But again, it's always those surprise guys, those middle range guys, where we just don't know. And the ownerships can definitely throw a wrench in everything. So, with that being said, Kevin, do you want to go ahead and dive right into this, or you have a few more things to say about the last card?
Yeah, I mean, that's just about it for the last card. I mean, you made some good points, and I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, and that's why I think we do so well, is we have the combination between your statistical mind and then the MMA breakdowns and the knowledge of the sport that I bring, and it works so well for us, because you're so good with the leverage plays and the numbers, and that will get us a lot of ownership and really figuring out where the big money is in the plays. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then for fights, like, where you need to know the fight knowledge is the ones like I just talked about, like just knowing what punts are actually good punts, which fighters are actually talented, like the ones we just talked about, Alvarez and John. So it's a good kind of synergy, for lack of a better word. But yeah, let's bring that same dynamic into this fight card with 15 fights looking at. We're leading off with Nathaniel Wood versus John Castaneda. I'll talk about this more a little later too, but I want to first say how much, as I did say, it is of a GPP card this is. This is the farthest from a cash games card from what I've seen. There are so many possible outcomes with this one. You really want to pay attention to a couple things. One of those is being the finish chance more than ever on this card, because getting a usual 75-point decision like from Grant Dawson last week, which is usually pretty good. I mean, 75 points gets the job done usually. It's most likely not going to be enough in this one. You know what I mean? If you have one of them, it might not break you, but you're going to need a lot of big showings with just so many potential outcomes. So you'll be hearing me preach finish chance and finish rate all day on this one. So just keep that in mind. And I'll tell you right now, leading off with Nathaniel Wood versus John Castaneda. I mean, I've seen Wood fight a couple times, and Wood is good. He's a good fighter, very technical, and always chasing the finish, which I like to see, as I just talked about. He can leave openings. We saw that with John Dodson, his first UFC loss. I mean, he faces John Castaneda, who is making his UFC debut. He's got a good record. He's 17-4 outside of the organization. He seems like a gamer, but obviously hasn't proved himself yet at the highest level. I do like Wood here. He comes in as the second highest favorite on the card. That being said, it's actually a fairly low finish chance at -155. For someone being that heavy of a favorite, I mean, it's not bad. It's not bad. -155 isn't bad. But I mean, I do usually see at like 9,500 cash and at -550 favorite. I would like to see a little bit higher finish chance usually, but 155 isn't bad. So I do like Wood here. I think you can attribute that finish chance though to the fact that Wood likes to make his money off of submissions and Castaneda has never been submitted. So that is something to think about. But I do like Wood here.
All right, and as you were just getting done breaking that down, Kevin, the ownership actually came in, so we can kind of reference that throughout the entire video now. So hopefully
Perfect.
that makes your picks a little bit more solidified. It usually does. So we're going to be referencing ownership, and with that being said, Wood at 36.3%, and Castaneda, did I say that right?
Yep.
5.7%. So virtually unowned versus the fifth highest owned, by the way, on the entire slate for Wood.
That makes sense. I mean, I don't have a lot of interest in Castaneda. The only interest I had in him was maybe, like I said, the threat he poses to Wood as being tough to finish, but I really just no interest in Castaneda, so that makes sense. That's good. Moving on, we have Ramazan Ameev versus Nicholas Stolz. Our second fight of the card is another one with a significant favorite in Ramazan Ameev. Very similar to last fight where you have a guy as a favorite, same thing, 3-1 in the UFC, just like Nathaniel Wood. Welcoming a newcomer, same situation. Now, I just talked about for 9,500. I want a better finish chance than a -155, right? But I did say it was acceptable. But I mean, I did just say that, I mean, historically speaking, if we see a 9,500 guy and he's a -550 favorite, it's not out of this world to see a -250 to 300 finish chance. Now Ramazan comes in at 9,400, so just $100 cheaper than Wood, and this fight has a nearly a +200 chance to end in a finish. Stolz has never been finished, and Ramazan is not a super great finisher. And I've looked through his stats and his scoring, and to be honest, he's just not a good enough scorer to do without a finish. So, I mean, when comparing two similar fights in these first two, if it's between Ameev and Wood for me, I'm taking Wood all day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so do you so with the ownership being at 12.7% for Ameev and 8.1 for Stolz, do you see any leverage potential here or just no? Straight up.
Ameev, I mean, it's a lot of in a normal night, I would say yes, but I just feel like I said earlier, there's so many possible combinations. If he gets a finish, obviously you will maybe in a larger tourney, because if he gets a finish, you're really going to separate yourself. But the thing is, because I mean, as there's going to be a ton of finishes, there's also you got to remember, as there's a lot of good finishes we want to target and we need to hit those finishes, there's going to be a lot of decisions that happen too that separates people in a negative way, which is good for us, obviously, if they're having decisions. One decision can screw up an entire slate on this one. So,
All right, I have a curveball question for you real quick. So
shoot.
on a so since we can only roster six people, do you think that of these 15 fights, six at least will finish in a finish?
Absolutely,
Okay.
100%.
So
Bet
thinking about
the
that,
house on that.
okay, awesome. Well, thinking about that from a viewer standpoint, if there are at least six finishing fights, you will not take down a GPP unless you have six out of six, not only winners, but finishing winners usually score more points. So that's just something else to think about. So, I mean, Ameev, is he really that good of a leverage play? No, if he does not finish, probably.
Correct.
That's usually how it's
Exactly.
going to play out. If we're talking about his, I mean, obviously you cannot take down or you cannot finish somebody and still score really well. There's obviously that chance, but it's unlikely.
Yes, and as I just talked about, I mean, I dove into that a little bit with Ramazan being not a good enough scorer to do without one. I mean, if we're talking, like I said, Mirab Divalvishi and one of those guys who has like these crazy amounts of takedowns and can do that in 3 rounds, I mean, I'm more than okay with that. More
Okay.
than okay with that. But that's it's not the case for him. So moving on, we have Betch Korea versus Pani Khaenzad. Betch Korea is a really solid fighter, but it doesn't it seems like she's a bit removed from where, the Betch Korea where she fought for the title against Ronda Rousey 5 years ago. She's been dead even in records since then and pretty lackluster, even in her wins. She's kind of boring, not a super exciting fighter. Pani has had similar success in the UFC with a win-loss kind of trajectory. I think this is a fairly close fight. And if you wanted to try to save some salary with Correa, I mean, I don't hate it. I mean, here's the thing. If you're just looking to make some money, this could be one of those options. You know what I mean? Like Betch Correa is like it has a real good shot at winning at 7,800. So if you want to try to pick six winners and just say, hey, I'm going to make some money tonight, that's where I could see her having some. The only place, to be honest, I could see anybody making any smart decision at a pick on this one. But for the most part, this is the easiest, if not second easiest fight to fade on this card, in my opinion. These girls absolutely are trash at finishing. They have 33 fights between them and have literally never submitted anyone.
Oh, okay. Then this is a no-brainer fade, at least for GPPs. So very small GPPs. If you're just looking for a straight-up winner, I'm talking like less than 10 people. And yes, those GPPs exist, which we always preach about in our Discord chat. That's the only scenario where I would see playing one of these two. 11.8% and 10.3% for both of them, respectively.
Yeah, I mean, they're not, like I said, no submissions out of 33 fights. And I think it's only like they only had five knockouts between them out of those 33 fights, too. So it's not like they're starching people. I mean, that's terrible. And this fight is basically, I think it's tied for the lowest finish chance. So definitely moving on from that one. So next up, we have Tanner Boser versus Rafael Pessoa. I think this fight makes a lot of sense to target, or at least it makes a solid target. It's not the best fight on the card, but definitely has a solid chance for a finish and is a solid option. You get two heavyweights, which always bodes, you know, decent for finish chance. They're both decent finishers themselves. Rafael is slightly better at putting people away than Boser, but Boser's a little more established. I think he's a little more technical and probably the better fighter here, hence his -270 favoritism. We just watched Boser also get a sweet knockout of Felipe Lins a couple weeks ago, so he has power. He has a lot of power too, so I do think that Boser is definitely a solid option. He should win this fight. But Rafael is 10-1, 1-1 in the UFC. He might not make a bad little punt here at 7,300. He has power. But I think this is a decent fight to target. Like I said, I usually do like heavyweight fights to target. It's a dead even finish chance. So, I mean, it's a coin flip if this one ends within the distance or not. But if I had to pick, I'd say it probably does, just being heavyweight. And Boza showing a little more finish ability as a favorite through his last couple fights. So I feel good about Boser being a more technical striker and getting the job done here, but he's a little expensive at 8,900. What's the ownership looking like here?
Yeah, so I can completely agree with you now. Now I feel a little bit more comfortable talking about MMA. So heavyweight obviously is a good fight style to target, a good weight class to target. 265 is there pounds for heavyweight, and it's coming in at 32.5% win percentage for, is it Pessoa?
Pessoa.
Okay. So that's actually not that bad of a win percentage for somebody who's a punt. You know, at 7,300 and could easily get that finish. And he's coming in at 6.5%. So that screams GPP. Boser, 22.2% ownership, which is also very low for somebody who is looking at a 50-50 shot at a finish. And obviously in a heavyweight class. So
100%. And just came off of a big knockout. I mean, he showed he has power, and I mean, I think he's a more technical striker. So, I mean, yeah, both make sense to me for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that's one of those make or break fights for GBPs.
I agree. Moving on, we have Mosar Evloev versus Mike Grundy. We were supposed to see Mike Grundy fight the other day or a week or two ago or something, but he had to pull out. But now he's back in a pretty quick turnaround fight against Mosar Evloev. Mosar is 12-0 and Grundy's 12-1, which makes for an intriguing fight right off the rip. I mean, both fighters are good finishers, with Mosar being a little more well-rounded and Grundy being just really a primarily grappling specialist and a very proficient grappler. Though Grundy did show power in his last fight, he had a nice KO win in his UFC debut. So he's 1-0 in the UFC. I mean, they're both undefeated in the UFC right now, actually. And honestly, this is a tough fight to call. I mean, I almost want to fade Movsar here, as honestly, I don't know how this fight is going to go down. It's so damn close on paper. I really don't understand the discrepancy, why there's a -200 favorite for Evloev. I mean, we have yet to see Mike Grundy look bad. They are both in great shape. Mike Grundy is absolutely shredded. Watch him at weigh-ins. And he's a very technical fighter and got a nice knockout in his UFC debut. So I just think this is such a close fight on paper, and there's just such a price gap between 2,000 between them and 9,100 for Mosvar and 7,100 for Mike Grundy. I almost just think it makes a little more sense to take Grundy at that price and save some salary for a fighter who has, I think, a better chance. Like at 9,100, I really want my guy. I want to feel confident. And I'm just not super confident. Yeah, you got a guy's 12-0 versus guy's 12-1 with similar levels of provenness. So how can you say one is a 9,100 and one's a 7,100? You know what I mean?
This looks like a great fight for leveraging by fading certain fighters in this, okay, or taking. Because if you look at this, Grundy is the second highest, and Kevin, you might not believe, the second highest owned guy on the entire slate at 7,100. And for everything you just said, a very low price tag, plus 162, which is a 38% win percentage. But if you look at that from Vegas' perspective, it's really not that great of a chance to win for that to really garnish that 41% ownership. Yes, in cash, he'll be incredibly high owned, and you should probably end up playing him in cash. That's what it's looking like to me right now. But in GPPs, he might be a decent fade. I'm not saying that, you know, he's not that great of a fighter, but if you're going with 41% of the field, I mean, and this guy loses, I mean, there goes your GPP chances out the door. All right, so this is actually going to be a very, very interesting fight. Is it, how do you say his last name, the second guy?
Evloev.
Okay. So 15.7% ownership on him. Can you imagine if he wins and what's the finish percentage? I already forgot what the finish
this
percentage
is. This is a pretty low finish chance.
Okay. So then,
why I was more obviously attacking the cheaper guy too. Because, I mean, if you don't get a finish, but he gets a good price point at 7,100, it's not the worst thing in the world, but.
I was about to say, then this might be a fadeable fight in GPPs for that reason. I think that might be a smart fade. So
I agree. I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all what you're saying. I mean, I just talked up Mike Grundy basically the entire time and how that's a good value play. So the fact that he's the most expensive or second most expensive fighter in the card and what seems to be the most expensive punt, quote unquote, by far, does not surprise me one bit.
Yeah. Yeah, the highest owned punt by far and second highest owned guy in general on the entire slate. Yeah,
you know, the only thing that surprises me is that that many people actually have some decent knowledge of him.
yeah, they're probably just looking at this line and then looking at the salary, realistically.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's very true. So moving on, we got Tom Aspinall versus Jay Collier. This is a really good fight to target, in my opinion. As I mentioned prior, I've just been preaching all finish. So important on the slate. This fight has a very high finish chance, and for good reason. Aspinall is a pure finisher. It's got 7 wins, all of them coming by way of finish. Collier isn't too shabby himself in that department. I mean, I think he's 8 finishes out of his 11 wins. And that's nice to see from both fighters. Both have losses, and both have shown holes. But Collier has some UFC experience. He's been kind of pedestrian while there, but I mean, he's got some wins in there. Tom hasn't been in the UFC, and he's making his debut as the favorite, which obviously is a little scary. But I mean, this is we're talking GPP, so that's okay to take a little risk right there, especially for a guy who's, like I said, seven wins, 7 finishes, and I just think he ride the hot hand at Aspinall. He's looked great. He has 2 losses, but one was a heel hook, which I mean. It doesn't really – if there's anything that doesn't properly represent how a fight is going off of just one stat line, it's if someone gets a leg lock finish, like a knee bar or heel hook or toe hold or something. I mean, I've seen so many guys losing fights and finding one of those and getting the win. So I don't think that properly represents how a fight was going. And his other loss being a DQ. I think he did some 12-6 elbows or something. I can't remember, but he got DQ'd. So – really only one loss, and I feel good in Aspinall. Just watching him weigh in, I mean, Jay Collier, I think, used to fight middleweight, which is crazy because he is a dumpling now. He just looks kind of fat and out of shape. Aspinall looks good. He looks tuned up, ready to go. So I do like Aspinall here, but you might want some Collier as well at that price. Like I said, he's got some finishes too. So and this fight has a minus 210 finish chance. So I think either way, you target this one all day.
Aspinall is the third highest owned on the entire slate. So we've already covered the top three. Two of the three top owned, and you can already guess who the highest owned is going to be on the slate. Aspinall, chalk, and you said great finish chance. Obviously looks in shape. I think all the points are pointing to him for him being a great target for GBP and cash. Collier is at 11.7%, so it could end up being a decent GBP option.
100%. The only thing I'd say that scares me about Aspinall and Cash is just, like I said, he's making his UFC debut against a guy who has power. So it's funny. I mean, ownership makes sense. It's just, that's one of those like
Scary.
crappy situations. Yeah, exactly. It's just scary. I mean, it's for cash games. I mean, it makes sense because of ownership. I hate ones like that because it's just like, I like him so much more in GPP. I wish he was a little lower owned, but play with that how you will. So moving on to the next fight, we got Nicholas Dalby versus Jesse Ronson. Dalby took a hiatus from the UFC for a bit after a string of close losses, one even being a majority decision loss to Till. So, I mean, someone thought he won that fight, which is a good sign. I mean, he stayed busy, got brought back after some solid work in other organizations. He has a win over Alex Oliveira in his return, which is impressive, who we'll talk about later. Jesse Ronson, on the other hand, doesn't impress me too much. He has a ton of losses in other organizations. He had a short stint with the UFC as well, similar fashion. Dealt with a couple of decision losses as well. I do think Dalby's a better fighter and is relatively safe. He's got a good record. I think he's 18-3. That being said, I would not expect a finish here out of Dalby. Ronson has only been finished once in the past 9 years, which is a little scary. And Dalby has some finish ability, especially as of late. But overall, if you look at his entire career, he's not a super prolific finisher. So if you want to take him to win, I think that's not a bad idea. Like I said, I think he should win this fight. He seems to be more polished, but like I said, Ronson is tough to finish, so something to consider with everything we've been talking about.
Yep, like we said, 6 out of 6 need to be finishes. This doesn't have that high of a finish chance. 16.3% on Dalby, Ronson at 8.4. So again, very low owned guys you might want to avoid.
Absolutely. So moving on, we got Francisco Trinaldo versus Jai Herbert. I'll tell you off the bat, I have little to no interest in Trinaldo. He is just, again, just for tonight. I mean, some other nights maybe, but he is not a good finisher. He just is not quite enough good enough scorer without finishes. I mean, he does okay, but he's just not quite good enough to get away with him not finishing. He's also 41, and I think he's going to start fading soon. He does look okay though. He does look okay of late, but he fights a knockout artist in Jai Herbert. So Herbert does have a decent finish chance, even though Trinaldo is pretty tough to finish. I think that makes an intriguing option for Jai Herbert in his UFC debut, but I mean, experience does matter. And consider this, Jai Herbert is making his UFC debut. Trinaldo is stepping in the octagon. Dude, he's a vet. He is a vet amongst vets. He is making his 20th appearance in the UFC. So against a guy making his debut, it's a little scary. You know, this guy's been here. This is old hat for him. This is a day in the office. So, and this guy's probably nerves are going to be at the highest they've ever been in his life, you know? So I think Trinaldo should probably win here. But if he does, he's definitely going to get a decision, I would assume. And if Jai Herbert wins, he probably will get a knockout. So, but again, I don't expect him to necessarily win. So take that as you will. For those reasons, this one is kind of on that line for fade or don't fade for me.
Yeah, so it sounds like a lot of questionable things that should happen in this fight. The Vegas has him projected right now at 42%, which is actually pretty darn high. So, I mean, if he does end up getting the win here for his in his debut, and it is a knockout, fantastic ownership on him at 13.7%. So, I mean, if you're running a bunch of lineups, why not take a chance here? Trinaldo at 16.3, and you're saying that might end up being a smart fade.
Yeah, I mean, Herbert's the only reason this one kept, like I said, on that line for me. I'm kind of in that gray area because, like I said, Trinaldo just doesn't interest me.
Alrighty, moving on.
Moving on, we have Khamzat Chimaev, my boy, the guy I've been talking up, liked in his debut, and compared him to Khabib. I was all over him, and he looked awesome. I'm very hyped. I'm hyped for this fight. I'm very excited for it. But it's funny. I am so excited for this, especially after I think he's got a 10-day turnaround since we saw him last, something
Yeah,
like
I
that,
was
which
so
is
confused, and we were texting about it. I was like,
he,
wait, is he fighting
the guy
again?
who just fought. And he said it in this post-fight interview. I think he's like, get me back in here. He's just trying to rack him up. I mean, he's 6-0, or was 6-0 making his debut. Now he's 7-0, and he's just trying to establish himself. And it's hard to tell. I mean, he ran through John Phillips, and he wants to prove that he can just keep running through guys and maybe start to get some ranked opponents. But here's the thing: as much as I talked him up and I love him, I think I'm gonna fade him. I really do. especially in GPP. It's just, he is fighting, I mean, small factor, he's fighting a dangerous fighter in Reese McKee, very long guy, good finisher, has 10 wins by 10 wins and all of them are finishes, so that's a little scary. But honestly, my biggest issue with this fight is the price. I don't understand. It doesn't actually make sense to me at all how he is a minus 1,200 favorite and is $9,800 friggin' dollars. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. This guy has fought one time in the UFC, six, and he's only has seven fights in total. Like I said, I'm a big fan. I'd love to see him just keep climbing up the ranks and see how good he really is. But he's still unproven at the end of the day. And being a minus 1,200 is crazy. Just because he's, why? Because he's 1-0 in the UFC against John Phillips, who literally loses to everyone. Like, that's not, that doesn't mean a lot to me. It's just such a ridiculous price point for a 3-round fight too. Like, for Chimaev to hit his value in this fight, he would legit need to just run a takedown clinic on him and ground and pound him to the ground, like, the entire fight. You need to see, like I said, some Merab Dvel, Vichy stuff like that. Like, all while not finishing the fight until, like, maybe the third round, like late in the third. You would literally need to have him to do that to hit this price point. It's just that ridiculous. $9,800, I've never seen anything like it. Like, if you told me right now I could get Chimaev and guarantee me a win and he gets 95 points out of it, I probably wouldn't do it. Like, that's like how expensive he is and how much it's going to screw up your salary for everything else. You're just giving so much where someone else can do the same thing for way cheaper. I mean, because he is such a ridiculous favorite and there's such a ridiculous finish chance, I mean, I think he is obviously the safest pick on the card. But, I mean, is it worth it at nearly 10 grand? That's my question, you know?
I feel like one of my students just graduated college because everything that you Thank just you, said Dad. Is like music to my ears. I mean, if we look at this, I tell you, the reason why he is so high owned, first of all, is because everybody, and I told you this the other day, everybody's been watching him because they have nothing else to watch, and they saw the hype with Chimaev, and they just saw the flashiness and just the total beatdown he had on Phillips, which is, first of all, why everybody's on him. And then second of all, you look at the, not to offend anybody, but the chalk donkeys, right? They're all going to go, at least for your casual guys, they're going to go for the cheap guy we were going for earlier, Grundy. Grundy is sitting at 41%, and it allows you, by grabbing that closely contested fight, to go up and grab Chimaev because he's so darn good, and we know that it's a guaranteed fight. I can tell you right now, nearly 20 to 40% of the GPPs will have those two as their combos.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The reason why what Kevin was just said is so on point is because, like we said at the very beginning of this podcast, you have to have six guys that are going to finish. Yes, Chimaev will probably be one of them, and he might even be near one of the highest scoring ones, but there's also a very big percent chance that he won't be. That he won't be one of the highest scoring finishing guys on here. Like you said, if he does finish and he finishes pretty quickly, gets to 95 points, is that worth it for 9,800 when you can go down, grab these middle of the road guys, nearly all of them, if not all of them, get a finish for you and you can take down the GPP? I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it. I mean, we could both be completely off. He might end up scoring 150 points on us. But again, it comes down to roster construction at that point. You have to have another underdog, a very big underdog or a punt play, come out and then finish their opponent and also score an extreme amount of points for that to make sense. All the dominoes have to fall in place for you to actually take Chimaev in another combo and it actually makes sense for GPPs. You said fade in GPPs. You did not say it in cash. I still think cash, you obviously have to go with that 1-2 combo I was just alluding to because it makes sense, right? You're going to take a...
Yeah.
With the ownership, first of all, and then you're taking a closely contested favorite at $7,100, and then you're taking a crazy favorite in Chimaev, which it shouldn't even be at that point, you don't think. So, all those things, like I said, very proud of you. I really like that breakdown, and with that being said, McKee's at 2.2%, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's probably going to just get absolutely no love for that. No. I mean, plus 700 on his end. It's just, yeah, like, if you take him, if you don't believe me, take him. Go play with the lineups, you know, anyone listening, go take him and then go take Shogun or Gustafsson or just one more decent fighter who's expected to win and see who you have left that you can fit in your lineup. You're going to have Matt and TJ as your last two fighters.
Potential, just saying.
You have potential, maybe against TJ. It's not going to help you. It just really isn't going to help you. in that regard. It's just you're going to be so starving for money, but that's my reasoning. Cash games still make sense, but that's why that's still a little bit in the gray for me, just because it does make sense in cash. Moving on, we have Alex Oliveira versus Peter Sabata. Alex Oliveira is a fairly predictable fighter in just terms of success rate. If you look through his career, he usually beats guys he's supposed to, and he loses accordingly, which is, I like people like that. If you're supposed to beat your guy and you beat him, and you're supposed to lose that guy and lose, at least you're predictable to me. I always say that to the kids I coach for wrestling too. I'm like, at least I know what I'm going to get out of you. It's almost better sometimes than a kid who's a better wrestler or fighter, but ends up just being a volatile, unpredictable thing. You know what I mean? I like to know what I'm going to get, and that's what with Alex Oliveira for the most part. I like him, and I like that I know what I'm going to get. He's coming off a loss to Nicholas Darby, which I will say, if common opponent means something to you, which some people it does, he lost to Darby, who Pete Sabata did actually beat. So again, if common opponent means anything to you, that is a fact. But
Yes.
yeah, it is a little interesting, but I think this is a good fight to target. Oliveira is a good finisher. Sabata's a good finisher. Sabata has had pretty decent success in the UFC and is a very good grappler. That's what he's going to try to do. I mean, this is pretty cut and dry. He's going to get the fight to the ground if he can. He's going to try to choke Oliveira out. But Oliveira has absolute dogs in his hands, and he's going to look to keep the fight standing and look for the KO. He has tons of knockouts, and if I had to just pick a winner, I'll go with the favorite here in Alex, because I think he's just got so much experience and he's got good hands. But either way, I think this is a very good fight to put your money on. This fight should end in a finish either way. I would definitely expect it, just because of how dangerous they are in their own rights.
All right, so decent finish chance here. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay, and then at 20.8% for Oliveira, and then Sabata at 15.4%. So those are a little under the radar for ownership. So I do like these guys for
Yeah.
GBPs. I think these are sneaky GBP options. Could definitely make or break you. 7,500. I don't know if that's a punt category range. If it is, then Sabata makes for a good punt play, and Oliveira, of course, makes for a decent GBP option. 8,700 is just a little bit out of my comfort zone if you're looking for a sure favorite. And as you said, he could easily go in, or he could easily get the finish at 8,700. Would obviously cover his price tag and then more. Nothing like Chimev. And moving on to the next fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to main, well, not the main card, this, because main card has about 1,000 fights, but moving on to another one of the main card fights, we have Paul Craig versus Gadzhimurad Antigulov. This fight is the most GPP of GPPs on GPP Planet and the GPP Galaxy of the
Got it.
GPP universe. This is just GPP all over it. I mean, you have a near even line. Okay, so this fight is very, very close, and obviously the price tag reflects that at 8,000 for Craig and 8,200 for Antigulov, and there's a minus 400 finish chance on this one. So you really want to target this. Aside from the Chimaev fight, this has the highest finish chance on the card. You need a piece of this one, I believe. There's just so much potential leverage here. Like I said, it's 50-50. So if this ends in a finish, half the guys are going to be basically out off the rip. You know what I mean? Or a good percentage of guys are going to be out off the rip.
25% of them will be.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, that's great leverage. I mean, just listen to these numbers, Matt. I mean, we got these guys have 32 wins, okay? 32
I'm listening.
combined wins.
Yep.
31 have come by way of finish
You
out of
said
their 32 wins, which is, what's
31?
up? Yep, 31. So
Wow.
31 out of their 32 wins have come by way of finish. Ready for this too?
Okay.
It gets better. They have 10 losses between them. How many do you think ended in finish?
All of them.
All 10.
Yeah, yeah.
There is, I mean, come on. How does this fight not end in a finish? There's just no way. Both are crazy good grapplers who can both be submitted. And I think this fight goes one of two ways. Either they both think they're better grapplers than the other, and someone overextends and gets caught, or they stick to standing because they realize they're both good grapplers. And when you have two guys like this who aren't the best stand-up guys in the world, someone's going to get knocked out. They also hate each other. I mean, weigh-ins. I mean, Paul Craig went up, tried to knock his hat backwards, got in each other's face. So, I mean, I think this one ends in a finish.
That being said, this is going to be the most strategical, boring fight on the card because Kevin said all those things. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, no, exactly. I'm totally kidding. This should definitely, it sounds like this should finish, and it should easily be a GPP fight. And for the Chalk Donkeys out there, they're already pushing the ownership on Craig, because guess what, Kevin? He is cheaper, and he's also a slight favorite, so that must mean he must win, right? At that ownership, yeah, 25%, exactly. And then the other fella here at 17%. I'm not even going to butcher his name. I'm not even going to ask you how to pronounce it. 17% owned, so slightly better GPP option with him just because of the ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, should end in a finish. So, like you said, it'll probably go the distance. moving on, we have Carla Esparza versus Marina Rodriguez. Another fight between two just kind of decisionator girls. I'm going to be real quick on this one because it's basically a carbon copy of the other girl fight on this card. Very similar lines, similar pricing, and similar finish chance, or the exact same finish chance. Both girls aren't great finishers, as I talked about. I feel like people tend to think I pick on the girl fighters as I fade them so much. But, I mean, honestly, some of my favorite fighters are female fighters, and especially even in DK. Some of them I like a lot, but in real life, a lot of them are. But there's so many times it doesn't make sense to play them in DK. And this is one of them. I mean, if that doesn't convince you enough, how about this, right? Like, just more numbers behind why it just makes sense is that they have a combined 8 wins in the UFC. I'm not counting tougher contender series or anything, but they're 8 wins in the UFC and I think 2 draws between them. They have 0 finishes out of those 8 wins. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Hence the plus 285 finish chance. I mean, only positive I'll leave you with here is that Carla Esparza is actually a good fighter at 7,600. That's what I'm going to leave you with. But again, not super interested. How's the ownership there?
So I was about to say the ownership's actually kind of interesting just because I think it's higher than it should be with everything you just said. 20.8% and 14.8%. I know it's not high, but it's higher than it probably should be.
100%. Especially
if you're talking GBPs.
Yeah, I mean, if I look at Besh Correa and Pani Khanzad and this fight, I don't know which one out of those four girls if I'd target one, because like I said, it's very similar. The one thing I will say is Besh Correa and Carla Esparza are both the cheaper ones, and they're both pretty good fighters, especially Esparza being a little cheaper than that at 7,600, being the cheapest girl out of the four. She's a pretty good fighter. So I don't know if you want to see the salary there, but again, really, 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 please, please, please do not expect to finish. Yeah. But moving on, we have an awesome fight with Alexander Gustin versus Fabricio Werdum. Probably the fight I'm most excited for on this card, if not the main event. And Werdum's last fight, he lost to Alexei Oleinik by split decision. Alexei is probably the most one-trick pony in the UFC, let alone the heavyweight division. I mean, if Alexei can't submit you, he usually loses. So much to the point that he actually hasn't had a decision win, I think, since 2010, with only like 2 knockouts during that time. So he just needs to get that submission. And Werdum just broke that streak in embarrassing fashion by getting outstruck by the grappler. So it was, I mean, Fabricio Werdum is a good grappler too, but this is a guy who was a heavyweight champion of the world, fought for the heavyweight title multiple times. I mean, he's supposed to be a complete fighter, and he just got outstruck by the grappling guy. So now he faces a significantly better striker in Alexander Gustafsson. Now, as I've mentioned recently, you guys know I love stats and trends and stuff like that, but we have seen a lot of fighters moving up in divisions lately, trying to try their hat at different weight classes, thinking they'll do better than their previous ones. And it hasn't boded super well for them for the most part. But those people are not Alexander Gustafsson. And Gustafsson was a huge light heavyweight. I mean, he was the only guy, when he fought John Jones, he was the only guy we saw match John Jones' size. Everyone was like, oh, crap, like this guy is actually John Jones, potentially. They're titans, so... Gustafsson is a elite fighter as well. I see people roasting him. Like at the weigh-ins, he looked a little bigger. Like, yeah, he's not cutting 25 pounds anymore at 6'5 to make 205. Like, he's obviously not going to be as shredded, but he looks good, especially, I mean, for heavyweight, he's probably still in the top 5% of fighters for body fat percentage. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He looks fine. He just, people think they're used to seeing six-pack Gustafsson against John Jones. So, but he looks fine. I think Fabricio is past his prime, too. He does have good finish ability. Fabricio is a crazy finisher, especially through submissions. Top-tier grappler, maybe the best heavyweight grappler of all time. And that is a little scary, but I think on their feet, Gustafsson just picks him apart. He's so much more technical. So much more technical. And this fight has a minus 135 finish chance. Oh, wow. But I think if it doesn't, I think even Gustafsson, I don't know. Gustafsson puts a lot of volume on people. He's a very, very technical striker. So I like Gustafsson here.
I like the ownership too. 25.4% for Gustafsson. I don't know. I might just forget it. It's one of those words I can't say. All right, get over it. I've been pronouncing all these MLB names, and it's starting to rub off. And half of them are from the Dominican Republic, so I
I
just
was gonna say, well, it's such a different dynamic. You got MMA, where everyone on this chart is from the Middle East,
well,
and
and you're not even including the fact that I'm pronouncing gamer tags. All right, from the
yeah.
Korean leagues too. So I'm literally feel like I'm reading like three different languages when I look at these guys. So
That's
we have
funny.
25 and 20% on these guys. All right, that's all I'm gonna say. All right, so it's under the radar and decent finish chance. You can go ahead and target these guys for GPPs. So let's move on.
Exactly. So yeah, great fight to target. Moving on to the co-main, we have Antonio Rogério Nogueira versus Shogun. I'm excited for this one. I'm gonna get some snacks at Blockbuster and listen to some Lupe Fiasco and get all pumped up. And oh, sorry, I thought it was 2010. Because these guys are old as dirt. I don't know why. I can't believe this fight is going on again right now. I mean, I saw Shogun versus Little Nog, and I literally got confused. I was like, because this fight happened, literally the first time this fight happened was 2005. The second time it happened was 2015. So this is a trilogy match, which is it's crazy. And also, this fight looks like it would headline UFC 138 or something. It's bizarre. But I am excited. I mean, last time they fought, it was actually a really good fight in 2015. It was fireworks. They earned Fight of the Night honors. It was really a fun fight to watch. Now things have changed a lot. If you look at Nogueira's losses in, say, the first half of his career, they were all decisions, very tough to finish. And as age catches up with you, it does with Nogueira as well. I mean, his last four losses, three have been by way of finish. So the Nogueira who really couldn't be put away in his first half, he can be put away now. But history tends to repeat itself in the sport. Not always, but we do know it does tend to repeat itself. And Shogun has beaten him twice. And the thing is, he beat him twice within 10 years of each other. That shows me that with 10 years of training and still fighting and being on the professional circuit and being in the UFC, Lil Nog didn't, he can't beat Shogun. 10 years later, still can't beat him. So what, 5 years later, what am I supposed to think any different? Especially where he's definitely shown that he's gone down and can be finished. So the only thing I see really different in this one is there's a better chance at a finish, hence the -230 finish chance on this one.
25 and 21.6% ownership. So again, another make or break fight, I feel like, for GBPs. It looks like we're finally starting to name off some of these fights that can, again, make or break you in GBPs. And I think as we go further down the list here, away from these, from not only the women's fights, but away from the ones who didn't have the high percentage finish chance and the ones that didn't make sense, and away from the bad chalk that we alluded to, we're starting to get into territory of, hey, these fights could easily get you a takedown.
Absolutely. And I really do think I like Shogun here. Like I said, he's beaten him twice before. Usually trilogy matches like this, I mean, you don't see a lot of trilogies where a guy fights where they're not 1-1 against each other or one guy's 2-0, but usually when they do happen, the guy closes the chapter 3-0. So I definitely think Shogun is the better pick here. Nogueira is a dog. Veteran has hands. If you want to take him to save some salary, like you said, and hope for that takedown, or save your leverage to get that takedown, go for it. But moving on to the main event, we got Robert Whittaker versus Darren Till. Yeah, this is a fun video. All right, thanks for watching, guys. See you.
All right.
I don't want to. I don't know. I don't want to pick this one. This one's so tough, man. I mean, where do I begin?
I'm gonna put you on the
Obviously.
spot. All right, real quick, if you had to make it, if you had to make a bet, I know you're about to talk about it, but if you had to, who would you pick?
All right, sweet. So now, so if you want to, I don't know. Let me think about it after I do my synopsis, because let me break some stuff down first, and then I will give you a decision.
Okay. Dude,
Obviously, you want,
I'll tell you what, real quick. Let's do it in the YouTube comments because I know tomorrow morning, we'll have the ownerships out and updated and everything. I know we will get this question in the comment section, so we'll have it there for you guys.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. But I'm super excited for this one. Obviously, you want a piece of this either way. This fight's gonna be awesome, man. It's just so damn close on paper. I'm excited for it. Till at the weigh-ins this morning just kept telling Robert Whittaker, he's like, "Let's go to war, man. Let's do it." I just think it's gonna be a sick fight. Whittaker is a gamer too. I mean, Breaking down some of the just the fine points of this fight, Robert Whittaker, he lands more significant strikes per minute than Darren Till. Now Darren Till has better significant strike accuracy. He's a more accurate fighter. So you got volume versus accuracy. They both have real close to even takedown defense, though I would consider Whittaker a better wrestler considerably, but Till's takedown defense has come a long way as well. I think Whittaker is the slightest bit more technical, but I think Till is the slightest bit more dangerous with power. But again, they're both so powerful and both so technical, that's essentially a wash. They both don't grapple too much, so I expect this to stay standing.
No, this will be fun.
Yeah, this is going to – I hope they just throw leather. They both have some – they're so technical and powerful. It's going to be awesome. I mean, they have similar resumes. Both have been beaten by top-tier guys, and both have beaten top-tier guys, with Whittaker having a slight edge there as the former champion. I mean, all these little slight edges are giving him the 8,300 and the minus 130 versus Darren Till's even. But it's just – it's hard to take a stance on this one. It's just – you know me, I always look for an angle through deep statistics or just the eye test. I mean, I've been around the sport for a very long time, and just the eye test has bode well for me too, along with the numbers. And there's no obvious edge here. I've heard all the sides of arguments for both about cardio, grappling, just better kicks, better just every little kind of like angle that people can work. And I just truly don't see that as being a big enough edge. From a DK standpoint, it has a minus 160 to end within the distance. And I think a stack is risky for that reason. But I do think if it makes it 25 minutes, there could be, you know, some fireworks. These guys seem like they want to go to war. And it could make sense for a stack in cash games for that reason. But I will end my synopsis with one statement about each guy. Robert Whittaker is a absolutely much better scorer in DK than Till when it goes the distance. Okay, so if there's not a finish, he is a way better scorer. Now, my last sentence on Till is that in my mind and Vegas's mind, he is a near dead even chance to win this fight at $400 cheaper. So do with those what you will.
And you haven't even heard the ownership yet.
No, what is the ownership looking like?
So I'll tell you who I'm taking in this. If I am playing one GPP and I'm looking for all the leverage there is across this entire card, and
you're
I heard
taking
all your
Whittaker.
Picks. No,
you're
I'm not. I'm not.
Really?
I'm not. Do you know why? Because the ownership on him is at 36.9%, which is decent. Which is decent, but compared to Till at 23.3%, that is so much leverage. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean
that's
14%
so
right there.
Yeah,
and I'll say this too. Based on those ownership percentages, I don't necessarily think this is a stack in cash for the very first time because of everything that we've already broken through. And I think because of that really cheap, I keep forgetting his name here at the top. It is Grundy. Grundy here at the very top. With him being so cheap and that pretty much being your one guy to save salary and able to get up to Chimev with a couple mixes here and there. With some of these other salaries that are kind of mispriced and everything that we've already talked about, Whittaker looks to be the favorable option here because he scores well in DK, because of everything you just said, and it looks to fit pretty nicely in the builds with it being a five rounder.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a close fight. I mean, I like both these guys. I mean, I don't see how people could doubt. I mean, like I said, Robert Whittaker is a slight favorite, but I don't see how people could doubt Till at least too much. I mean, he's got a ridiculous amount of knockouts and finishes. I mean, he's beaten Kelvin Gastelum, Stephen Thompson, Donald Cerrone. I mean, really big names. And his only losses are to, like, Jorge Masvidal, who's on top of the world right now. We just saw a fight for title. And Tyron Woodley, who was the most dominant welterweight champion of the past decade. So,
yeah. So, I mean, from everything I've heard, it looks like Whittaker is going to be your safer because of ownership option. And it looks like Till's going to be your leverage play. And both of them have very high upside, whoever wins, of course,
absolutely.
As far as DK points. So another make-or-break fight. I feel like we just talked about three straight make-or-break fights, so I'll go ahead and bring it to this. Kevin, let's go ahead and start talking about core fights.
Yeah, so absolutely. So I'm going to do something a little different this week for my end of the video synopsis. I don't think there's a right necessarily cash or core kind of games answer on this. And like I said, I really want to attack GPPs, and I think everyone else should too. Mm-hmm. The pricing on the, and just due to ownership and then the pricing on this card being so unreal, I think this is going to be as GPP as GPP gets, especially with big tourneys. This is going to be a card where you can take down the best DFS powerhouses in the business. I mean, there's going to be so many variables that I think you can really beat up some pros. I really do. This is your chance. So, I mean, it's going to be tough to find the optimal lineup even for the vets. So
Kevin's going after the sharks. You hear first, guys.
Yeah, we're taking down some big fish here, for sure. This is the one to do it. So I'm going to end this with essentially a green light, yellow light, red light system on this one, meaning like if I think a fight's good to target, I'm going to give it a green. If it's in the middle, yellow, there's upside there, and red meaning I'm going to fade it. So just going from the bottom up again, just to recap, Nathaniel Wood versus John Castaneda, green light, especially for Wood. Ramazan Ameev versus Nicholas Stoles, red light, don't like it. Betch Correa versus Kayanzad, red light, don't like it. Tanner Boser versus Rafael Pessoa, yellow light. Little upside for both, definitely probably closer to green, yellow green, being heavyweights with a finish chance. Most far versus Mike Grundy, yellow light again. The ownership doesn't make sense on this one. That's the only issue. But Mike Grundy has a real shot at 7,100, sure. So that's going to give that the yellow. Tom Aspinall versus Collier, green light for sure. High finish chance, both heavyweights, love it. Moving on, Nicholas Dalby versus Jess Ronson, yellow light. Think Dalby's a good fighter, gonna have trouble getting the finish. Moving on, Francisco Trinaldo versus Jay Herbert, very close yellow light. That's toeing red, but I mean the fact that Jay Herbert can knock him out at 7,700, only upside I see there. Khamzat Chimaev versus Rhys McKee, it's a yellow light. I mean, any other fight, I'd probably put Chimaev at a green light, but that price is just way too much. Only thing keeping him really yellow is cash games. Alex Oliveira versus Peter Sobotta, definitely getting the green light. Good finish chance, and ownership makes sense on that, kind of lower ownership. Paul Craig versus Antigalov, green light all day. High finish chance on the card besides Chimaev, and is basically a coin flip, so the green light all day. Carla Esparza versus Marina Rodriguez, red light all day. That is a terrible fight to target. Alexander Gustin versus Fabricio Werdum, green light all day. Good finishers, two vets, and a heavyweight fight. And then co-main, Little Nog versus Shogun, definitely a green light. Two good finishers, very high finish chance on the card. Definitely like Shogun more. And then main event, green light all day. We got a five-rounder between two really good finishers and two really good fighters. So definitely green light in that one, obviously.
What Kevin just did for everybody out there is beyond anything we could ask for. He essentially just gave you guys a player pool, a fight player pool that you guys can choose from GPPs. If you're playing multiple lineups, he basically gave you fadeable fights. He gave you his favorite upside fights and people within it. Take one side of either one, come out with as many different combinations as possible, and that takes a lot of guts to come on here and basically stake that claim, because that's hard to do. Usually, I mean, with all the volatility in sports, it's hard to really stake a claim. That's something at Daily Grind Fantasy that we like to do a lot. And again, I do that with the leverage spots on my cheat sheet, but he literally just did that here on this video. So Kevin, I don't think you realize how important that is. So many people ask about excluding people from their pools. Which fight should I fade? You just did all that. I think that pretty much covers the entire slate. Do you have anything else to add as we kind of wrap it up here?
No, I mean, absolutely. I think there's a lot of good fights at target in this one, so you really got to definitely nix out the bad ones and realize that you're going to have to make some decisions and trim the fat on this one. But I'm excited for this one. I hope everyone tunes in, and it's definitely a good fan favorite one. I mean, those top three fights are going to be electric, so absolutely tune in and watch those.
I think we're nearing about an hour on this video, 50 minutes to an hour, so hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully you stayed all the way to the end. If you did, thank you so much. Please hit that thumbs up. Please smash that like button. Please hit that notification bell. Of course, we'll be going live before lock with a lot of these MLB slates, NBA, and also NFL, which will start up here in 1 to 2 months from now. Hopefully everybody's getting their mock drafts in. And with all that being said, guys, have a great rest of your day and weekend, and let's cash.